welcome to episode 6 of the Dentistry Online podcast. I'm going to be talking to Christina Chatfield, a dental hygienist from Brighton, about the current difficulties faced by private dental professionals in the face of the pandemic. So since the end of March, routine dentistry has been on hold across the UK. The only way patients can access treatment is through designated UDCs. How would you describe the last 8 or 9 weeks?
Well, I suppose like anybody else describes it, I've never experienced. I've been through quite a lot of hardships. I lost my mum 10 years ago. I fought for the survival of this business with a business partner that broke up into a very acrimonious relationship who was a friend. And I don't think I've ever experienced something that's been, I mean, death's quite a thing, isn't it? Because it stays with you, but you do heal. You know, you can start to remember good times, but this last 8 or 9 weeks, because as a practice owner, you have your team to think about. As a business owner, you have all the people that you owe bills to and your rent to and your rates to. As a parent, you've got your kids to think about. And you kind of put yourself last in amongst all that. You have to be strong for everybody else. So sometimes I think the last few days have been really quite emotional. I find myself on the beach in the morning. I think it's the time of year. It's National Smile Month. So let me just sort of, pick up a little bit. National Smile Month kind of inspires me. It almost has done for the last 6 or 7 years. And it ties in with something that I launched way back in 2013 when I walked from Scotland with the Oral Health Foundation, you know, an initiative I set up. And it just always reminds me of my mum. And I think this brings it back to it. And I think I spoke to one of my practice manager yesterday, who's having, she's got 3 young kids, a husband who's a builder. She's self-employed with us because we didn't get her contract sorted out. So I've got that emotion of guilt thinking, wish we'd done this for her before. And she was really low. And I just think we just try and be strong. And you find a strength from within you. So how do I describe it? Like anything I've never experienced. Like highs and lows of fighting for stuff. So you get the adrenaline of thinking you've made some steps forward for your business, for your staff, for other professionals, and then you come plummeting back down to the reality that you wake up in the morning and it's not a dream. Everything you're doing is just the same and it just doesn't go away. And I think that's really in a nutshell, it's hard to describe, except it's emotionally there all the time.
No, I can't imagine, honestly. I mean, I know we've had conversations over the last few weeks, but what is the state of dentistry like in Brighton at the moment, as far as you're aware anyway?
Well, it's critical for most practices, isn't it? They had on the news last night, they had the hub showing on Meridian TV of emergency care, and they've been inundated. But all practices, you know, in my area, it was nice, actually. I've just received a postcard from a dentist that I used to work for 20 years ago, just acknowledging the interview that I did for Sky, thanking me for stuff that, you know, and I know that from another practice that's not far away. Some of them are nervous about having a voice. I think that's true of we're regulated, people have judgments on us as professionals. So a lot of us are in the same boat. Some businesses in Brighton will get the small business rate relief grant. You know, their rateable value is under £15,000. But I was contacted by a dentist who's got 2 businesses in Angmering and Ferring. And both of them, you would have thought, got the £10,000 grant. And because he's got 2 businesses, he doesn't get the small business grant on any of them. And pulling his hair out, somebody else contacted me and said, I feel like giving up. She says, I've done lots of tough things. I've climbed Kilimanjaro. This was through Twitter. And I said, you know, don't give up. I think women are quite good at reaching out to other women as well. You know, I'm with you on this. I'm 100%. I feel what you feel. I think when you talk quite openly, if you are an open person, then people can relate. I think more relate to it at this time than any other time because everybody's experiencing it in their own way. Yeah, COVID hasn't targeted different people. It hasn't chosen private businesses over NHS businesses, over businesses that have got money that have businesses that haven't. It's just that the distribution of support's not the same.
Exactly. And why do you think, you know, private dentistry and private practice has sort of fallen through the cracks? Do you think there's a reason for it?
Or if you look at it, historically, dentistry's predominantly been NHS. And so when the Chancellor excluded practices, I think in that middle section, especially the 15 to 51, it's because he put it into public sector businesses like medical are financially supported by the NHS. So we've fallen through the cracks in that regard. And I think the assumption is that most people will be in some receipt of some sort of grant in small businesses. But you know, as dentistry's evolved, dentistry's had to move into the high street. It's had to move into areas where it's more convenient for people to get to, because it's not an after five, it's not a before 9 o'clock, it's not a Saturday, you know, it's matching what people do in terms of their lifestyle. People that work in London all day can't, it's not that easy for them to take time off, so you have to be accessible. I used to work for I used to work for Pfizer actually, and their head of sales and marketing at the time, it was interesting because his teeth were really badly stained, and it wasn't that he didn't care, he really wasn't, but for some people in that sort of position of a job to take time off to go and access dental care, especially if they're not in pain, wasn't a priority, didn't really realise. So therefore, if you move the industry into areas where it becomes more easy to access, then costs go up, and then you move out of these small house-converted businesses that then have suddenly fallen outside the Chancellor's support because of the rates relief, because they're not where they historically always are.
Yeah. No, exactly. I mean, I know you've sort of issued these five calls to action that you're sort of, you know, brings together dental professionals from across the spectrum. You know, it's not just dentists, not just hygienists, it's everybody, that you're trying to make it very inclusive. What do you think the dental profession should do now to sort of make a difference, to sort of highlight these concerns?
I think they really need to. We've got a lot of different groups now setting up, from the, you know, the BDA, the BSDHT, we've got our normal groups, we've got the GDC. We've also got, you know, social media is quite interesting because we've got different Facebook groups, different WhatsApp groups. And if we could all put the same energy into, you know, into, if everybody pulled together, put their egos aside, I think, then we could make major impressions on the Chancellor. It happened with the betting industry. You know, maybe it's because they've got money, but they united and turned that decision in 5 days for the government to offer rates relief and grants to the betting industry, the estate agents, the hairdressings, the nail salons, the vaping industry. Maybe it's because as a profession we're more private in ourselves, and we are quite individual. We're not, you know, we're competitive with each other, because that would be true to say, and it would be ignorant to say that dentists don't compete, for because it's a consumer-led market like the optical market. You know, that's the way we've moved. So I think if we could unite in a different way and work together, that's very hard to do in the space of 8 weeks. Well, it appears that it's very hard to do in the space of 8 weeks. It wasn't that difficult for the betting industry, but maybe it's because we've got NHS contracts and private contracts and different associations.
Of course, yeah. It's just actually putting that into practice and you know, all getting behind one movement in order to sort of, I don't know, highlight change, if you will.
Yeah, and I think we're also very judgmental. I think that's easy to do, but we see somebody doing something and we're quick to be critical rather than thinking, actually, that's for the bigger and better good. You know, there's no I in team, and wars were never won if we just rolled over and gave up. And sometimes sticking your head above the parapet means that it's a bit like being Marmite to somebody, isn't it? You either love them or hate them. And I feel, for my own, this is how I feel. It's just how I feel, that I'm like Marmite to a lot of dentists, because I took on a dental business 13 years ago. I fought for a change in model and proved it could happen. And I think it's very easy to take the criticism and the punches, but actually there's equally, there's a lot of good stuff. Just when you feel low, that those sucker punches feel quite hard. And I think that's human nature in anything we do. I wear my heart on my sleeve as well. You know, my face says it all. You can tell. I would never be one of those people that could look at a baby and say it was beautiful if I didn't think it was. I'd have to find something else to say. It's just my nature. I would find something else to say. But I honestly would. There's beauty in it.
No, I understand what you mean. You're saying you're quite easy to read. You were very upfront and you, like you said, you wear your heart on your sleeve. You'll say how you feel. No, I can see that. I can see
it. My staff say I have a work face, but they know me. So I had only just got to the point after 13 years of taking Mondays off as a day off and Tuesdays as an admin day. So for 13 years, I've worked 6 days a week and late evenings. So the patients get the best of me all the time. And once you get to know me, the staff, you know, they'll know that I am the most approachable, the most easygoing, the most loving. But when they first start working with me, they're just not sure how to take me. But because of my work, it's my work face. And I had to start a staff meeting just before lockdown and say, right, guys, I don't know what to do about this face. It is actually quite happy inside, but it's just the way it looks. And without, I don't know what to do. You're just going to accept that's my face. I can't change it. My business partner is my sister-in-law. She's an ex-lawyer. And she said, she was at that meeting. She goes, believe you me, I know that face. I've known it for 20 years. It's just her face.
Yeah, there's a massive difference, I think, between the two of what's going on inside and what the exterior is. Okay, so, I mean, this might sound like quite an obvious question, but I think it's a good one to ask just so you could sort of, you know, hammer home what it is that you want to see happen. But what do you think needs to be done here, you know, in terms of government? What would you like to see happen to get dentistry back up and running safely and efficiently?
Well, they need to let us open to start seeing our emergency patients, that's for sure. But emergencies, just seeing emergencies, aren't going to pay the bills. So it's how you balance that with your furloughed staff, but how you understand how you're going to be able to work. So our standard operating procedures are key, and we've been going around in circles now for weeks and weeks as to what we can do based on evidence or not. That is hugely important to get ourselves open safely, but based on scientific evidence and not on we need to close because we think this is going to be, we need to close because we think aerosols are bad. You know, without the science to back that, it's such an unjust situation to be through. We've gone through hepatitis, HIV, CJD, and we all know the implications of what happened with CJD in terms of our infection control, being told to buy dishwashers and all that high expense, which we don't need to use anymore. So that's a priority, and package that up with some financial support, with business grants and rates relief across the board to all businesses. And I include vets in that. I don't think that's what I mean. Other providers, other businesses, it shouldn't have been a hit and miss approach. I know it's very difficult at the start, but we are now 8 weeks into it and businesses are facing financial ruin. Marry that up with increasing the level on the cap for self-employment, and also the fact that some people don't have a tax return, because that's where my practice manager falls apart. And that's where my newly qualified hygienist falls apart, starting his working life without having a tax return in. And it's a misconception to think that dentists and hygienists are, you know, the days have changed since those levels of income were there. And that's because although cost for the industry's gone up, the cost for dental treatment, so is the cost for all the materials that go with it. You know, when I opened up in 2007, that was at 12.5%. It's now 20%. That cost hasn't been passed on to the patient to that level, or the cost in PPE. It's been passed on in how you pay your associates, how you pay yourself, how you pay your staff. So that needs to be addressed, because, you know, if your business falls apart, they have no job to come back to. There's not going to be a massive opening in NHS jobs for them. So we need to, one, protect the jobs they've got, and two, give them the financial support they deserve. So make sure that the level of PPE we need isn't coming at inflated prices.
No, that's important. What was it that you said, you know, what's the comparison at the moment in terms of what it did cost and what it is now potentially going to cost?
So your basic PPE masks box of 50 was costing about £3 a box in January. Just pre-time we closed was £6.95 a box plus VAT. At this precise moment in time, about £17 plus VAT, but they haven't got any stock. And I do believe that the government has issued a VAT hold on them so that we won't be paying VAT on stuff like that. But without being able to get the stock, and at the moment, everybody's going round in circles with what equipment we have to buy, the Perspex screens, do we need air purifiers? Well, this is all based on supposition at the moment, because Southern Ireland have gone back to work.
Yeah, I've seen.
They've gone back to work with the same equipment, the same PPE that they had. And I think that's really quite important, because we've been working, as I said, with, you know, you have to treat everybody as a potential virus carrier. Mm-hmm. So what we want is a return to work that's safe for the patient, safe for us, that's scientifically based, get that financial support to practices now, who have actually, you know, lost. I was listening to an interview with the car industry on Sky just before I was in the Sky room waiting to go on Sky News. And I was hearing the way they said, oh, we're 40% down, 60% down. So when I went straight into that interview, I thought, we're 100% down. We're 100% down. And it's the dental industry is a £75 billion industry to the UK business. And 8 million people... Yeah. have been denied access to dental treatment in the last 8 to 9 weeks. It's massive numbers, isn't it? Massive numbers when you put it that way. And 25% of deaths in COVID-19 patients are diabetic patients. All things that a profession that we can have an impact on. And that's not excluding the lack of screening and diagnosis of oral cancer that's been missed in these last 8 weeks. So yeah. Mm-hmm. Most practices have been turned down for that interruption loan. So we've got the bounce back loans, which are of a lower interest. We've applied for that. The hardest thing for us is we borrowed £50,000 in February to pay off our overdraft and to buy a Trios 3D scanner. So I was really excited. Business had turned a corner. That's like I cancelled it the week before. A week before lockdown, I cancelled that order. So that £30,000 has been how I've been paying my bills, but it's just draining down. So to compound that and put another £50,000 debt onto the business and borrow, which, you know, if I believe in the business, which I do, it's just when we start to come back to work, and I think that's the hardest thing. So one loan's going to cost me £500. The other one, which is lower interest, which I thought I'd just pay one off against the other, but at this rate, I'm going to need the other one. It's going to cost me £800. So that means at a time of compromised return to work financially, you don't know what you're going to be doing. You don't know what your cash flow is going to be like. And businesses die on 1 month's cash flow. You know, that's £1,300 debt that I wouldn't have had previously with nothing to show. I can handle the £50,000 debt, which I'd planned for. But another £50,000 that I hadn't anticipated with actually nothing to show. Not the lovely piece of equipment, not the last 9 weeks' revenue, none of that. But I know that I should feel myself lucky that if I get all that I can survive. But it's quite frankly not how I feel at the moment.
It doesn't take away the hardship of it, I don't think. You know, everybody, I think, in this situation, within dentistry and outside of dentistry, everyone's position is unique, yeah. And everyone's concerns are valid in this. So I think that's important to remember, is to, you can always say, you know, I'm lucky in that I can continue this, but you know, you are allowed to feel how you feel, and it's frustrating, and everybody's feelings are valid, I think, during this. And I know you said to me as well, this is obviously the whole point of this, is that you want to provide care for your patients. You know, this is the thing, is patients are missing out on vital treatment, vital appointments. And when this, you know, when you do go back, you know, that you're going to have all these people who have had problems that could have been fixed previously, and they've just worsened over time. So I know you've said you're going to be kicking off a campaign to coincide with National Smile Month, which I think links in with this sort of patient care element. Can you just sort of tell me a little bit about what you're planning to do over the next month?
My last 7 years has been about raising awareness for mouth cancer and HPV and the Oral Health Foundation. So it kind of links in very well because it's National Smile Month. So, and looking at how people perceive dentistry, because it's been quite interesting. I've been told, don't read the comments on any of the news articles, public articles. I've been accused of being a rich money-grabbing dentist in a big house with a Maserati. You know, that's none of those things for the majority of us either. So we've got that perception from the patient to deal with. So, and people quite happily pay a lot of money at the hairdressers, but they seem to be so uptight about the fact that they accuse to get your hair done at the result of this. So it's called Save Our Smiles. It's going to be #SOS, #SaveOurSmiles. The Instagram account will go live next Monday. There's going to be an option to donate to the Oral Health Foundation. The idea was to dye your hair and do, because you can't do DIY dentistry, but you can do DIY hair. So it was to link in that. We've got an Insta filter that makes your teeth look bad. So it's about getting people to take a picture, upload this filter onto an Instagram account, and to make a donation if they wanted. We've encouraged the profession to make a donation, but we can get consumers to do it, if we can get some of our patients to do it. So, but we are now trying to see if we can put a filter on the hair as well, so that those people that want to take part can use the filter for the hair and for the mouth. Those people that want to sort of show unity can dye their hair anyway. I mean, I've just been out in Brighton. I've just been down to the seafront to get a coffee at an independent coffee shop, and I met my friend down there. Socially distancing over, but I wore the big red mouth outfit. I just walked down through Brighton. That's my plan every day. So my friend Jolene's got one in Scotland. I sent one up to her. So we're kickstarting it with National Smile Month. That mouth has been in quite a lot of activities. It starts a little bit of discussion. Everything's been so dramatic and depressing. And this for me is a way of uniting some of our professionals, but we've targeted hygienists and therapists, nurses, that's who our target group is initially, to get them to work together. And because part of what I've done is about, you know, when I did the walk from Scotland, is about raising the profile of the DCPs, of hygienists and therapists, into broadening access to care. Why it's so important that people who wouldn't normally come to the dentist because of fear of cost, pain or anxiety, it was opening that door for mouth cancer. So that's always been my passion.
Yeah, no, that sounds really good. I think people jump on that before this has even started. It just goes to show sort of what teamwork, I guess, and people working together can achieve. So fingers crossed when this does go live, it takes off in the way that you guys want it to.
Yeah, I hope. Well, I think it's got potential. I haven't dyed my hair like this since I was 16 years old. I was going to a concert in Loch Lomond to see the Buzzcocks and Sham 69. So just for reference, I'm 56. Yeah. So quite a long time ago, it's like 40 years ago. And at that time, we didn't have hair dye. My mum had some green food colouring. So I put in the green food colouring, and it rained during that concert. And I had a pale blue Snoopy top on, and this green food colouring went running down my face and into my clothes. So actually, when we thought about it, and my friend kept saying, go and dye your hair pink, go and dye your hair pink, go and dye your hair pink. She was harassing me. So I bought the dye. I had a few attempts before it worked because I didn't read the instructions right. But I thought, wow, actually, 56 years old. I got a tattoo for the first time a couple of years ago after I did the Camino. And it's not middle-age, it's not middle-age crisis. It's actually, it's actually quite suits me, I think, my friends have said.
Yeah, I like it.
It's fading out now, but I'll do it again. I'm going to keep it a colour.
It's quite difficult to get pink to hold, actually. My younger sister did it about a month ago, and hers is, she's having to sort of constantly.
When you've got a lot more grey, it does actually help. But that's why we thought the filter as well to colour the hair. Easy to do, doesn't cost any money to do because it's all social media driven.
Of course, and that's important during this time. I think people, yeah. Minimal cost is definitely something people are thinking about. I mean, just to sort of round it off, I know you're down in Brighton, obviously, so you're very lucky in that you've got the coast right there, which I think is particularly, well, I'm just looking outside now, it's lovely weather over the last few days.
Yeah.
How have you been? I mean, obviously, I know it's been incredibly stressful for you, and like you said earlier, you know, your emotions are or the last 2 months have been an absolute roller coaster. How have you been winding down, or sort of, you know, managing your stress levels?
It's actually, that part of it's been fairly easy. The best thing I did recently before lockdown is I bought a bike. So, okay. And in February last year, I started cold water swimming. Well, when I say swimming, it's not like cold, it's not like swimming, but it was just, it was the same week Victoria was starting, when I thought, how do you take this business forward? How do you start to get a life balance? And somebody said, come in, this, we do a Monday morning mass at 10:45 on a Monday. So I didn't start till lunchtime. So I started throwing myself in the sea in February last year, and I've kept it up. But this last 7-8 weeks, I've more or less been in every morning through the cold. It's, you can get down there and you can look at it and think, how people look and think, how are you going to take your clothes off in this weather? It's cold, it's windy. But once you get in that water, there's just something, it just does something for you. You go in feeling one way and you come out feeling another. So it can, I mean, I've been in this morning and I'm going to go back in this afternoon. When my mum died, so I wasn't born in Brighton, but my father and grandfather were. So I used to spend, my last holiday down here was 1976, when the West Pier was still standing. So if you come into my practice, I have been going down the sea for the last 8 years. I take lots of photographs. So throughout my practice, we've got a big mural on the wall of the West Pier. When my mum died, I put her ashes in the sea in front of the West Pier. So when I'm feeling quite, it's where I feel, where I feel good, it's where I feel quite close to her. And following on from the walk in Scotland, I took the last of her ashes on the Camino with me. So I'm not a religious person, but it's quite a spiritual feeling. And I think I get that when I go and see. So it's been my sanity. And I know there's lots of research, lots and lots of research about cold water therapy. And I've encouraged two of my hygienists over this last 8 weeks to come in at some point, you know, social distancing. Emma said it's one of the best things that come out of lockdown for her. So that's how I do it. You know, it's a cycle in the morning. And the minute you, because I live above where I work, so it's really interesting because I never really go out the front door of my practice. I go out the back door. I'm going to say this because we've got an alleyway at the back and it's called Piss Alley. It's horrible, but that's the back door of my business. And I walk up and down that. When I go to Marks and Spencer's, I go down Piss Alley and I walk back Piss Alley. And it's just, and so I've been going out the front door on my bike and freewheeling down Queen's Road down the sea, because you walk out my door and you look down, you can see the sea. And then when I go shopping to Marks and Spencer's, rather than come back up that alleyway, I've been going a slightly longer way round through the churchyard, and it's beautiful. And I think I've been here in this building for 11 years and I've only ever used that alleyway as my access point. So
it's kind of shown you, it's sort of opened your eyes to what's around you.
Out one door and in the other. Yeah, no, I love the freewheeling of the down to the seafront, and I can be down there and just, I'm lucky I can walk it, but I can be down in a few minutes, and then it's just like, and along that seafront in the morning, and there's people out walking the dogs really early. And I've got a couple of friends that live around the corner. One's really tall, one's quite small. And I see them from a distance. I recognise them from a distance with the dog. So I'm really fortunate in that where I live. I live upstairs. I live in a flat that's got a roof terrace. So I'm lucky to have some space. I can get down the seat. And I'm lucky to be able to talk to people, you know, 3 metres apart. It was really difficult at the start to try not to cuddle. But it's quite easy. It's amazing how you can now, it's sad, isn't it? But it's amazing how you can see somebody now and you don't automatically, virtual love and the virtual hug's still there. So that's been my, that has been my sanity. I don't know, do you live in the country or where do you live?
I'm in Hertfordshire. So I'm quite lucky in that I'm far enough out of London to have quite a lot of green spaces around me. I would say it's urban in the sense that it's, you know, I can get into London pretty quickly, but there's a lot of greenery around me. So that's definitely something I've been taking advantage of as well. So yeah, no, I'm completely with you in that respect.
I just grew up at the foot of the Angus Glens. I wasn't born up there. So we've had lots of greenery round about me, you know, just at the foot of Glen Clover, Glendall, all those beautiful places. Oh. But there's nothing for me compares to being beside the sea. I never want to be away from the sea.
It sounds like it's been sort of a real help in this time for you. But yeah, thank you so much for taking the time out to have a chat with me.
Oh, I really appreciate it, Gabby. Thanks for following up and listening to it.